Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys, you're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to The Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Mark Skuer. How are you, Mark?
I'm fine. I'm very delighted to be on your podcast. So I received the invitation, so I'm very curious what we're going to talk about and what we're going to talk about.
Likewise, Mark, just I'm really excited for this one because I honestly don't know which direction it's going to go in, but I know it's got the potential to be very insightful, not just for me, but for the listeners. But before we get into the heart of the conversation, maybe just a brief background on who you are and what you do.
My name is Mark. I'm 49 years old. Within a few months, I will turn 50, quite old. I started my career as a physical educator at a high school. So I did that from 1999. And in that time, in that period, I also did UEFA C, UEFA B, and UEFA A, a youth elite license at the Dutch FA. And then I became a head coach in amateur football at division level. When I received my UEFA A license, I started at a Premier League club. It's called ADO Den Haag. It's one of the... was then one of the former Premier League clubs, is now playing First Division. And I was coaching the first year under 11, the second year and the third year under 16. And my fourth and fifth year, I was under 17 coach. And the last year, I was under 15 coach. And from there on, I went back to an amateur club. Why? Because I was also working as a physical educator at a high school. And my former director, he said, you're working full-time with me at school, and you're also working part-time for 25 hours at the club. That's not possible. It was possible, making long days, but interesting days. So she said, you can only work for me. I said, okay, then I will stop at the Premier League club, and then I will go back to an amateur club, which is only 3 evenings and 1 Saturday or Sunday. And with the Premier League club, it was we trained 6 times a week. On Tuesday and Thursdays, we train at 1 o'clock. And then they had school, they had physical education, they had recovery, they had food. And then they joined another evening session. So I went back to Westlandia. I coached under 19s. We played second division with a lot of Premier League clubs. And then during the winter break, I became also assistant at the first team because the assistant coach, he had stopped due to private problems. And he, the head coach was also a friend of mine. We did together, we did UEFA A license. We went to school together. We played football together. And he said, I want you, do you want to become my assistant coach? I said, okay, it's interesting. Not youth, but we went to senior football. And then I said, okay, but what's my role? Because I don't want to be an assistant who will pump up the balls and etc. Now he said, you can do analyzing the opponents. You can do the tactical planning. So, okay, that's quite interesting. So during the winter break, I became also an assistant coach of the first team, and I was coaching under 19s, but that was also during the COVID period. So when then we started in January and we ended in March because the government said no sports, no nothing, it will end here. So the second season, I had the opportunity to coach under 21, but also become an assistant. And I choose to become an assistant because I want to make the step towards senior football. And now that year was we also started, but then we also ended again during COVID. And then in 21, during the also the winter break, my it's not my old club because my father was also a head coach there, and it was nearby my school. They called me and they said, Mark, our head coach is leaving, and yeah, we want you as a head coach. So in 2021-22. I went to TOGB, and they were playing at that moment at, let me see, Premier League First Division, at the third, fourth league in the Netherlands, Amateur League. And yeah, quite an interesting group, very young for that level. The average age was about 21, 21.5. And we became champion. So we went to the third division in 22-23. And then in October, November, I was also a coach educator at a Dutch FA for quite, I think, for 5-6 years. And then one of the senior head coach educators, Peter van Dort, we went in a conversation and he said, yeah, there's a becoming a position is coming free. It's my position. I will become a manager within the academy. So I went for the application, had a job interview. And 2 weeks later, he rang me up and he said, Mark, if you want, you have the job. So that was quite exciting because I was also for 25 years I was working at a high school and a good salary, a lot of free time, but my ambition was also to work full-time in football. Now I'm working full-time at football at the Dutch FA, and I'm a senior head of coach education at the Dutch FA for almost 3 years right now. So my job is primarily to educate coach educators, and I do that with a team of head coach educators, making policy for the Dutch FA within the management team, because also due to my role, I'm also one of the members of the management team of the academy. So that's what I'm doing right now. So it's a 40-hour job, but sometimes it's 60 hours. No complaining, a lot of fun, a lot of hard work. So that's my role at the moment.
It's amazing. You give me a lot of background around your journey so far, and you know, there's a few questions I've written down here just to kind of, I guess, dig deeper. And you know, you mentioned right at the top, you know, about being curious, and it certainly made me more curious about your own journey already. So, a couple of things that you touched on. I'm not sure which order to go in, but I'll start with this. It's around this piece of sacrifice, right? You mentioned there you was working a 40-hour job and then a 25 hours on top of that in the coaching space. Yeah. And it got me thinking recently about, you know, just how much coaches are willing to sacrifice. Because it's a big challenge, right? You know,
at this moment right now with this generation, it is. They want to earn a lot of money, but not working that hard.
Where do you think that stems from?
I think that's also the reason why I left school, because I have a son, he's 15 years old, and we let him free. So he's waiting for his final verdict of he's passed his exams this year. So Thursday, it will be judgment day. So we want to help him, but he need to ask it. And if you don't do anything, and you obtain a bad grade. So just look in the mirror and ask yourself the question, what did I do? And if the mirror asks you, yeah, you did a lot of things, but it just is failure, no problem. If the mirror says to you, hey, you didn't do anything, then it's quite easy for me. Don't cry. Just reflect on your own things, what did you do good and what did you didn't do? Yeah. And then you start over again. And that's the thing I miss right now at a lot of parents, but also a lot of children at schools, because it's only, no, your teacher, that's a problem. No, he was sick. So when he was sick, you didn't quite understand the lessons. So no, you missed the lessons. No, the school is responsible. No, it's your own responsibility. If you want to grow, if you want to develop yourself, it's your own responsibility. And yeah, that takes time. And sometimes you learn. And in my opinion, you never fail, because yeah, when I do something and it doesn't work, I choose another way. And I reflect on my own handling. And I hope I receive a lot of feedback from people around me who ask the right questions. And I say, okay, what did you do? Like for example, Peter, he's the manager. And I known him from quite a long time, but I've been working for 2.5 years right beside me right now. And he gives an answer. He always asks questions to me. And that makes me reflect at things on how did I do something good, or what could I have done? And that's for me perfect. But sometimes it's quite annoying, because it just helped me a little bit. And then he asks another question. But yeah, it's a way of learning. And yeah. I think if you want to develop as a person, as a football coach, a coach educator, or whatever job you do, you need to reflect on your own handling.
It's really interesting, because, you know, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking about my own experiences personally, and even working with coaches and even players. But it, really what you're talking about is ownership and accountability,
right? Yes.
And you know, one of the biggest challenges that I've identified in my experience as a coach developer for like the last 10 years is whether coaches actually have that network of people around them that are willing to ask them those questions and challenge them. And especially, you know, as you go further up the ladder in terms of coach education, in terms of maybe not so much with the UEFA C license, but maybe with the B license and the A license in particular, once coaches start getting in around those spaces, there may be maybe considered to be the senior person in their environment, unless they're already working in an elite environment. So what ends up happening is, if they are considered the senior person in their environment, they're the person that everyone wants to ask advice from. But actually, who do they go to for their own advice?
Own advice, yes. So
it's really interesting, because, you know, obviously we started by saying that, you know, it might be a generational thing. They might want more instant gratification now than prior. But I think it's always been a challenge for coaches, at least even when I was coming up as a coach, and even now observing it as a coach developer, that coaches go on these courses, but there's very few that are intentional about what they're doing in between the courses. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, but I think we think at the Dutch FA that's the main thing, because at the moment I'm teaching UEFA B, and I educate a coach educator. So one of Janneke Bell, who's going to England as an assistant coach from Serena, she's right now one of my coach educators, and I am guiding her through the coach education program within the Netherlands. So we are teaching together UEFA B course, and we also say to the students or to the participants, we facilitate during the course. We facilitate 3 hours of learning how to create a football situation, how to influence a football situation. But then you go back to your own club, and that's the environment where you should learn. So we facilitate on Monday evening, for example, and on Tuesday you are giving a training session to your own group. And then it is important that you have the right coach from the club beside you, who is giving you feedback and asking the right questions. And a lot of participants, they think
someone else who's a colleague, or would that be someone from the German?
No, that's someone is from his own club. So yes. We started with blended learning. We created an environment, an electronic platform like the Gout, and the courses within that. So true. We, let's say, for example, we UEFA B, we have 24 meetings, central meetings and group meetings, and most of the time for UEFA B is like, say, 24 meetings, it's 19 central and five group meetings, and we all go to the club of the coach. So they will organize a session for 3 hours at that club. And then the coach educators will come there, and we have maximum of 12 people, 12 participants who are joining the UEFA B course. And then we go on the pitch for 1 hour, 75 minutes. So we have theory at the front, then we go to the practice, and then we go back inside and reflect and evaluate on what we have seen outside. So, but then on Tuesday, they go back to their own club, and there's someone who's guiding them from that club during the course. Yeah, and we have, let's say, three moments when we also come together with those coaches. So we can influence them about how we think about how to learn football, how we think football should be played and coached and trained. So, but that's quite not that much, because we see in the own environment, they let things go.
So just link to that, you know, I'll take you back to something you said. You're very fixed on saying there, you said you'd facilitate for 3 hours of learning. Now, this word facilitate is something that often gets discussed a lot within coach education. What does that look like for you as a coach educator in terms of facilitating that environment? Would you say it's quite instructional?
Because let's get our UEFA B course. Every meeting has a start and the end, and it's all been well prepared by our developers. So we, as a team of senior head coach educators, we also work with it closely with a team of developers. So in March, I went to the FA and I spoke with Lucy and with Dan, and there's all the team of developers. They develop the course, and the senior head of the coach educators and the senior head coach educators, they will coach the coach educators to gain that course. So, and I think when we speak about facilitate, it's during the evening. It's 3 hours in the Netherlands from 7 o'clock until 10 o'clock. And let's say we do UEFA B youth, and we have, for example, the under 16s. So during that time, we ask from the participants to develop a training session. And three of the participants are going to give the training sessions, like for 20 minutes. And they need to create the learning situation, and they need to, later on in the course, they need to influence the football learning situation. And that's how we facilitate them, by giving them tips and tricks. How can you simplify from 11 against 11 to, let's say, 7 against 7 or 8 against 7 or whatever? How can you simplify the game, but still you've got your key players within the football challenge you want to coach? So, and yeah, we all do that with theory at front, and then we go to the field. We have practice, we coach them, we ask questions. We also use the observers, the other participants, to, okay, you need to listen, you need to look, you can ask questions, you can help the men or women who's giving a training session. And then we go back inside, and then we're going to reflect and evaluate again what we have seen outside, and we combine that with the theory. But that's in the 3 hours, that's the most we can do. And then they need to make assignments within the GOUT, and they get feedback from us as coach educators. But then they go back to their own club, and that's where they're going to learn. So, okay, what did we learn on Monday during the course, and how can I use that within my own environment? And then it's the most important question, okay, what change do I see with my players? Because we all do it for the players. Eh? The players, that's the thing we want to, that's the end result. Okay, are they going to change? Are they going to improve? Are they going to develop them?
So just linked to that then, you know, something that you touched on earlier as well, is that in your own journey, you had the option to become a head coach, but you chose to be an assistant coach. Yeah. So let's explore that a little bit and link it in, because one of the challenges that, you know, often find, you know, as a coach developer on the B license in England myself, is that difference between those guys who are coaching as head coaches and those who are assistant coaches, and what that means for them in terms of their learning journey on the formal qualifications. So, you know, to yourself initially, why was it you chose to go down the assistant coaching route, not the head coach route specifically for yourself? And if you're looking at it through the coach developer and coach education aspect, what would your advice be to coaches who are maybe going through a B license at this point in time in their journeys? Is it better to be an assistant coach or better to be the head coach? Obviously, there's no one right way, but
no.
What are your thoughts on that?
If you look at my own pathway, I was coaching from, I think it was 1999 until 2020. I was coaching only youth teams from under 11 up until under 19. And at a certain moment, when I was asked to become an assistant coach, okay, I can be a head coach at the under 19s, but also, I can also be an assistant coach at the first team. So then it was for me quite impressive to see, okay, what difference are there? Because when mostly at the time you are developing it in a youth academy, and with the first team, hey, they want to become champions. They don't want to go down or whatever. They want to stay up. So that was for me quite important, but also my personality, because I was also a physical educator at that time, and I worked with children from 12 up until 18, 19 years old. But I know myself. I'm quite, I can be, let's say, pretty persistent. But then I think, okay, does that work with a first team? All the players, they got all different reference because they are older. They are, I think, a little bit smarter sometimes. They have more experience. That doesn't say that the experience is knowledge, because I think that's quite a difference. But I think, okay, I will start it for 6 months and I will give training sessions. But I was still the same Mark when I created the situation and I was influencing. And it was... For me, it was mostly like no difference. Okay, that's quite but I was an assistant coach, so I didn't have the full responsibility, because my colleague Marcel, when we win a game, we had won a game, hey, they were cheering, and when we had lost a game, hey, they were criticizing him, but not me. Because, and I think it's quite unbelievable, because you're staff, you're one team, so you decide everything together. So that was for me a first step to work with first teams, and that made me hungry. So okay, if I can do this in an assistant role, hey, maybe my next step is to become a head coach, more responsibility, but also managing not only the players but also the staff around it. I did that also at Ado Den Haag, because there you're working with an assistant coach, a goalkeeper coach, a physiotherapist, a team manager, etc. But then to the third amateur level in the Netherlands. With the second amateur level in the Netherlands, it was quite different, because it was also the club, eh? So the vision of the club. When I went to TLGB, I had a meeting with the chairman and with the technical board, and they say, we have one vision, and that's 90% of our players in the first team, they come from the academy. So we don't have any money to buy players. This is the team. And when you become champions, it's perfect. And when we go down, no problem at all. If they develop, then it's not our level to play on. That was quite interesting, because I'm a winner. When I now know with my application, the chairman asked me, and if we go down, what then? Yeah, I'm quite disappointed, because the purpose of playing football is to win. And if you want to become a champion, you need to win games. And when we go down, I don't like it. So that was for me quite a big difference, becoming from a professional club to an amateur club. And then it was quite young players, I think 21 years old they were. Yeah, and then you need to find a position between that, you know, we're going to train 3 times a week. We play on Saturday or Sunday. But if we want to train extra, is it possible, or one less time? So it was quite interesting. So I think my situation when I was an assistant coach for, let's say, 18 months during COVID time, it became quite clear to me that I want to become a head coach. And yeah, and it also happened. So, and then I had a little bit of luck to become a champion within the first year. And in the second year at the highest, second amateur level, we became sixth place. That's quite good. But yeah, you learn a lot. And I've had coaches. I think some of them were good. Some of them were, in my opinion, when I look back, not that good. And yeah, then you have some experience from a player and you have seen coaches and then you become full responsible for a team. So yeah, how do you kind of educate and develop yourself as a head coach? So yeah, and that was for me quite interesting to read a lot, to speak a lot with colleagues. And I have my own vision. And this was working with my staff then, 2021-22 season. Yeah, it was quite challenging in the first 3-4 months with the team because they had a quite totally different experience with the former coach. Not good, not better, no qualification, but I had another vision on how to play football and how to learn to play football. And then when we succeeded and we were going to winning games, and but also the players, they saw they were developing. Yeah. Then the ball was beginning to roll, and then at the end we became champion.
Just linked to that, you know, something you said there is around, and it's something that you mentioned a few moments ago around the game is about winning.
Yeah.
Right. Which I find refreshing to hear, because there is a big trend at the moment about not the end goal but how it's done.
Yeah.
There's always, you know, everyone's talking about game models and playing philosophies and we want to do it this way. Yeah, but you can do it whatever you want. If you don't win, it doesn't really matter. And that's my belief anyway. So my question to you, Nobby, you've been coaching for a long time. And I want to just kind of, you know, really try and compare it to my own experience and my own observations over here. How has coaching changed? Because, you know, one of the things that we spoke about earlier is about, you know, maybe the generation of today, they might want to get there a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
But often I feel like the younger generation now often not only want to get there quicker, but they want to get there quicker in their own way. And for me as a coach developer over here, and even as a coach, I've observed that maybe a lot of the stuff that younger coaches are now doing ignores maybe some key principles around coaching and fundamental principles around football being an invasion game.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts and what are your observations around that?
When I go back, when I started coaching in 1999, I was coaching under 13 and an under 13 team. And when I look back at that period, when I, let's say for in 22-23, I stopped becoming a head coach because it's not possible to combine those jobs. Yeah, it's going to the players. They have more asset like video analysis. Or data, in which way you can discuss about data. Is it good? Is it bad? Mostly is how do you use data? It developed. That's normal, eh? Because everything is developing. But when I look back, yeah, there will be quite some changes when I look back to the players when I coached then. And when I should play a coaching players right now, so that's quite a big challenge. It also depends on the level you're coaching. When I look in the Netherlands and almost at the lowest amateur level, they also use video analysis. Okay, is it a goal? I don't think so. It is an asset, so you can use it to develop your playing style or to develop developing players. But yeah, it's quite different right now. And that's also, you see it in my role as a coach educator at UEFA B course. Yeah, they all think when they come in, well, we work with self-scan. So when you join our courses, you need to fill in a form. And it's a rubric and it goes from left to right. Left is not that good. And on the right side, it's very good. Sometimes I also say to my wife and kids at home when I start a new course, I need to buy a new television because they all drop on the right side of the screen. They're finding themselves very good at the moment. And when you ask them in the first meeting two or three questions, they are totally lost because it's all based on YouTube, on Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, whatever. It's inspiring. But when you go from winning to team functions to team tasks to football actions, it's quite different how to learn to play football.
So it's interesting you said it because I find it a similar experience. So when I'm delivering on the B license, I often look at it and think, my question in my head when I'm looking at it is, how many of you are actually ready to be here? And it goes back to my earlier question, you know, what are coaches doing in between the formal qualifications? How intentional and deliberate are they with that, you know, with that period of time? Because, you know, UEFA B, you know, at least over here, we're looking at it as the highest grassroots qualification, but your entry level into the professional games.
Yeah.
Right. And for some coaches, they probably haven't done any formal stuff for maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years before they've even considered the B license. For others, they're on the other end of the spectrum and they probably just finished the C license 1 year ago.
And they want to join UEFA B right away. Yeah.
And I'm not against that, but my challenge to coaches and the thing I want coaches to really think about is, what have you done to make sure you're ready?
But I think that's the main question, because when my son is also playing football, and he also played when he was under 8, 9, 10, 11 at a Premier League club, and then he went back to his amateur club. And right now it's quite a big amateur club in the Netherlands. But when you see the coach, he receives his UEFA B and 1 year experience, and he wants to go to UEFA A. But and I think that's the biggest problem. You can't describe it as a problem, because we at the Dutch FA, we have a vision on how people learn. We have a vision on playing football, and if you combine those things, we've got our vision to learn to play football. But when they are during the course, they embrace it. And when they have their diploma, they have their license, they go back to their club and they do their own thing.
Yeah.
And when I watch the games at different clubs, I think, that guy's educated UEFA B last year, 2 years ago. Now I see this. Okay, it's quite interesting.
Yeah. You know, just linked to that, then, you know, so because one of the things, like, you know, we spoke briefly before we jumped on here, and we said, you know, you said you're curious. I would consider myself to be quite curious. And the thing that I've been wrestling with constantly over the last few months is, how do we get coaches to open their minds sooner? So what I find, you know, on the UEFA B over here, we've got four blocks face-to-face. Mm-hmm. You know, we do the first block, then they go and do the stuff in between. So those group days that you talked about, the central days, four times. And I observe, like, maybe some by the third meeting, some by the fourth, that's when they realize, oh, actually, I need to learn more.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was speaking to a colleague of mine recently, and I was saying, you know, there's got to be a way where, as coach developers and coach educators, we can be more creative or more intentional about how we get that moment where we say, you know, that penny drop moment to come earlier. What are your thoughts on that? And then how do you guys tackle that, if at all possible?
When I look at the Dutch FA, when we start UEFA C, and we go from team function to team task football actions, and within that position, moment, direction, and speed. And when I see the evaluation of the participants, and they always say, when we come to position, moment, direction, and speed, it's quite difficult. Okay, then you ask them questions, because, okay, if you want to win a game, you want to attack, you want to defend, you do that as a team, because football is a team sport. You need position, moment, direction, and speed with the 11 players to score a goal or preventing to score a goal. And that's when that moment, the position, moment, direction, and speed, that's the moment when they think, this is football. This is how football should be played. And they, it's before, first you need to know it, yeah, and then you need to do it in the practice, and that's quite difficult. For example, for a lot of participants during UEFA-C course, but that's that penny drop moment, and it, the only thing you can do it is by giving a lot of training, leading a lot of training sessions, and developing those training sessions, and simplifying the game, because I also. The first trainings we receive from participants is always 11 against 11. Okay. But if you simplified it from 11 against 11 until 6 against 6 or 7 against 6, with your key figure, key players, it becomes easier. I don't think it will be easier, but the moments are often. And then they say, oh, yeah, that's right. And then you need to. Yeah, that penny drop moment, position moment, direction and speed. But first of all, how are you going to create that learning situation? And I think that is the most crucial part of UEFA-C, how to create that football learning situation. And because when you can create a football learning situation, you cannot influence that situation. And if you cannot influence them, yeah, you don't develop players and the team.
Just elaborate on that a little bit, because you know you're using that phrase quite often now in that football learning situation. You just elaborate just for people listening to understand what you actually mean by that.
Let's say, for example, you're analyzing a game, and okay, then we have problems to build up from at our own half. Okay, then it's the fair. We developed a coaching model in the Netherlands. And after the show, if you give me your email, I will share it with you. It's no problem, because I've also been showing it to Dan and to Lucy. It's about three questions. It's about reading the game, and that reading is very objective. Then the second step is analyzing the game, and the third step is influencing the game or the training. Mm-hmm. And we have also all kind of small steps. So when you are reading the game, it's okay, what do I see? Well, really objective. And what is the result? Do we go to the other half, or do we lose the ball, or whatever? And then we have the third question. How is it happening? Based on when we say UEFA-C, the standard procedures in the game, and from UEFA-B, we go to developing a playing style. And UEFA-A, then we become also the playing style of the opponent. And then this next question is, okay, I'm gonna develop a training session based on the five W's in the Holland. So, what is the football? What's the football challenge? Where is happening? Who is then the key players? When is the moment? And which is mostly the role of the opponent? And then, if you have described the five W's, then you're gonna say, okay, what am I going to do and what I am going to say? And then that's the model, and then you can create a training session. But so from 11 against 11, you're going to simplify that to, and it also has to do with age characteristics. So when I'm coaching under 15, it's quite different than when I'm coaching under 19. So, and that's okay. And how can I create a situation it didn't go well on Saturday? How can I create that situation on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday on the training pitch? So that my players, first of all, it's not successful, but then I'm going to do something. I'm going to change something from my position, moment, direction and speed. And then I'm going to give them solutions. But they are responsible to search for that solution, because I'll be giving them a reference, and within that reference, the gamers of the players, they make the decisions and go search for your own solutions.
So just link to that, because I think it's really important. You know, I asked you earlier, you know, how coaching has changed to where it is today from where it was. When I first got into coaching, it was very instructional.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that approach has been given a very negative reputation. But I do believe there's a very, very important place for that still in today's, I guess, in the toolbox of a coach for the modern day. And you mentioned there about, you know, helping players fundamentally to find their own solutions to the problems, you know, the game, what I call the football problems and the game moments. But do you find there's a tendency for coaches just to kind of stand back because they don't have their own solutions for the players?
That could be a possibility, but I think it's very important in which age are you coaching? Because when you are coaching the young ones, they don't have a big reference. And when they don't have a big reference, you should bring them in that football learning situation so they can learn by doing and by playing. When I'm coaching a first team, let's say, for example, a Premier League club, and there are older people, older players from 21, 30 years old, 28 years old, they build up a reference. So I can also ask them questions and they can answer it. Because when I ask the same question to a player who's 11 years old or a player who's 28 years old, yeah, I think I will receive a different answer.
So link to that then, because I agree with what you're saying. But it's maybe want to ask you this question. This is a really hot topic of debate sometimes in coach development spaces and even just in coaching in general with a lot of the people I interact with. What are your thoughts on unopposed practice?
I think, can you describe for me unopposed practice?
Unopposed practice, so to simplify, is when we're looking at really just working on the technical, really technical. Okay. Because if we agree on the idea that we want players to come up with their own solutions, is there really a place for us to work on the technical actions? Now, I would say yes, but not to the extent that people maybe do. I actually have a viewpoint that I think unopposed activity, where you're really isolating and trying to refine the technical components, should be left to the experts.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Yes, but it's also quite a hot topic here in the Netherlands, because I think everything you do in football is within the context of a team, because it's a team sport. So when I say to my right winger, yeah, you need to dribble more and turn left, turn right, but there's no opponent and there's no teammate, he's not going to communicate, he's not going to make a decision, and he's not going to execute that decision. So then you come to simplifying the game. So, okay, we need to put him in that situation, but with opponents, so he can communicate with opponents, but also with his teammates. Then he can make decisions, and then he can execute that decision. And really isolated, I'm not a fan of that, because I think when I give my son a ball and I let him dribble down the street in a straightaway, okay, and then on Saturday, there's an opponent, and then he cannot go straight away because he needs to make another decision. Should I pass that player? Or maybe I need to pass the ball to my teammate.
Yeah.
So I'm not really a fan of really isolated training. I think everything you do. Yes, of course, you can do it in extended warm-up or whatever. But yeah. I think when you're going to your football challenge, to your football problem, then there need to always be teammates and opponents, because football is about communicate, decision-making and executing that decision.
It's interesting. So I often talk about the unopposed practice, the isolated practice should often be left to the experts, because you mentioned earlier about having reference points, and obviously the earlier they are in their journeys, the less likely they are to have a detailed reference point. So I often use the example of Arjen Robben. So like with Arjen Robben, we know every time he gets, we know what he's going to do. He's going to drop his shoulder. He's going to come inside. The question is, though, and the thing that we have to decide on is, when is he going to do it?
When depending on teammates, opponents, precisely, or whatever.
So yeah. My example of the isolated practice, I think, you know, where we should leave it to someone who's an expert is, we use Arjen Robben. I say to Arjen Robben, okay, well, I want you to show me that same maneuver as if you were doing it against Ashley Cole.
Yeah.
Show me that same maneuver as if you were going to do it against Patrice Evra. Show me that same maneuver as if it was Marcelo. Now you're going to see, because he has those levels, the level of experience and that knowledge, it won't look the same.
No.
But because he's got the contextual knowledge to understand the subtle differences that might exist based on the opponent. But with a young player, they're not going to have that. So, I'm with you. I don't necessarily like isolated practice either. I do think there's a place for it. But the one thing I say to coaches, if you're going to coach isolated practice, coach it. Don't just let them run through it. Work with them to give it out.
Yeah, so, but it's also when you play small-sided games, eh? Let's say for three against three, three against two or whatever. So when a player is dribbling and he's trying to pass the opponent, and it's the first time it's a failure, the second time it's a failure, the third time you're going to ask, okay, maybe what can you do? Yeah, I'm going to pass the ball to Mark because he's standing open, he's free. Okay, try that. And then you're going to build up a reference, okay, when I'm going to pass and when I'm going to pass the ball. And I think that's quite important for players to learn that by doing that. So when you have, especially when you have small-sided games, 3 against 2, 4 against 4, 4 against 3, they need to execute a lot of that decision. And yeah, when you're putting them in that football learning situation, yeah, they're going to build up their own reference. Okay, when it's going to be possible to pass the opponent, or when it's possible for me, when it's better to pass the ball to my teammate. Mm. And when you do that, it also becomes quite more clear for them. Instead of running on like a cone, and when I see the lots of coaches, 1 meter before the cone, you're gonna make a movement. Yeah, okay, right. But the cone is not moving, and then the second training they're gonna place a teammate. Yeah, 1 meter is not enough. Maybe it should be done earlier, or maybe later in the situation, yes, depending on everything.
100%. That's why I always say everything matters.
Yeah,
everything matters, and then linking it to that, it's I think I'm really specific when I talk to coaches around different things that they need to consider, and I always said you're not going to be good at everything, but you've got to know what you're good at and what's your strength. So the role of the coach in that sense also changes. But if I link it back to that practice design piece and looking at it from that standpoint, it's, I often challenge coaches with the question, are your games represented in your training? I.e., the reason why a player will make a decision in the game, is that reason present in your session?
Exactly.
Is it present in your practice? Because, and it's not just a version of that, it has to be as it is. So as an example, if in a game you want the player to make a certain decision, but that certain decision is based on whether that defender in front of them does something, is there a defender in front of them in training? Right? So the training should be a simulation of the game and not a version of the game, if that makes sense.
And then it's quite important. When we have the opportunity, you're going to play a team tactical 11 against 11. Okay, mostly perfect. But when you don't have 22 players, but we have only 16 or 15, how can you simplify from 11 against 11 to 8 against 7, but still within the team intentions you have with the team? And When I give my example, when I was coaching Theo Gebe in the first few months, I was lucky to have 24 players in my squad. And on Thursday, we play also 20 minutes team tactical regarding the opponent, but based on our own team intentions. But I had two assistant coaches and one goalkeeper coach at the moment. And then we had team intentions. And when I was playing 1-4-3-3 or 1-3-5-2 or 1-4-4-2 with a square or with a flat line or with a whatever. And then I also said to my assistant coaches, okay, we play 10 minutes, we're going to play that. And your team is going to play right now 1-3-5-2. And the first couple of trainings, the 11 players were going to play on Saturday or Sunday. My captain, he was fully in stress. Coach, what are we going to do? They're going to change the system. Yeah, what? So what's the problem? We have team intention, how we want to attack and how we want to defend. So the only thing that's going to change is mostly spaces. And within the team intentions, try to find for solutions. And if something goes wrong in the training, I don't care. We're going to watch the training back. We're going to send some clips to you. And we're going to ask you questions. And when then that was landing by the players, and they said, okay, that doesn't matter. This is the team intention we have when we are attacking. And when the opponent is playing 1-3-5-2, 1-4-4-2, it doesn't matter. We know what we want to do. Hey, and then it's all about executing the decision. And then quite often it goes not good, no problem. And we're going to train it again. But also, okay, what did you do? What did you train? What happened in the game? Okay, let's see it back. And okay, we're going to that part of the game, we're going to bring back in the training session on Tuesday.
But it's important to, because also within that, you know, the importance of making sure it's part of the game. Because one of the challenges I see is with a lot of coaches, they put a session on. It doesn't replicate the game. It doesn't mimic what the game is. It's not a simulation of the game. And then because they think they've given certain messages, they get to match day, the players don't quite operate in the way that they're expecting them to. And they say, well, we've been working on this in training. But the reality is you haven't.
No.
You've been working on something else that might be linked to what you're trying to get, but it's not what you're trying to get. So then I always say to the coaches as well, like, you know, if you're, you know, even when in the way that you design your session, design your practices, if you have certain conditions, constraints or rules or whatever they might be, you have to be very careful and consider, right, these rules are going to help or hinder the player. Now, they might do well in the practice, but if those players made that same decision that they're making in your session on a match day, would you, what would you say? So as an example, you know, if, you know, I'm not a big fan of saying, oh, you need to make a minimum of 5 passes or something like that before you can. Well, actually, what would you say if I was in front of goal, but I realized my team's only made 3 and I said, no, I can't score yet because I need to do 2 more passes.
Yeah.
What would you say to me? We would, you ain't going to clap. You ain't going to give me a pat on the back. You're probably going to take me off the pitch.
Yes. So, why did you score that goal? Yeah, because I need to, we had one more pass and then we had 5 and then we could score a goal.
Precisely. So, you know, you've got to be very, very careful that you're not in, you know, in the attempts to try and get your outcomes, that you're not coaching to your session, but you're coaching to what the game would ask the players to do. And then, you know, the thing I talk about a lot with coaches is, you know, around the principles of the game. The game is an invasion game, fundamentally. You know, as you said
earlier. But you need also 2 teams, 2 goals, 1 ball. So your direction, one team is attacking, one team is defending.
100%.
And that's what we also quite see a lot is they call it chaos training.
Yes.
We're going to play 4 against 4 with 2 balls. Okay, quite interesting because on Saturday I'm not playing with 2 balls. But it could be an asset to obtain your goal. So when you say, okay, we're going to play, let's say for say 3 plus a goalie against 3 plus a goalie, and then with 2 balls. Yeah, I want to make a superiority. So when, okay, yeah, 2 against 1 attacking or 2 against 1 defending. But then is the question is, can you bring that back to 7 against 7, 8 against 8, in the game against 11 against 11. And then it's not a goal by itself, then it's an asset to reach that goal, the bigger goal. But that's quite difficult, certainly for starting coaches.
100%. And I think linked to that, you say, you know, there is there is times where you're going to say, well, you know, I might trade off the realism because I want to really work on something specific. I want to maybe work on psychological decisions around, you know, where to prioritize. It might be that there's two balls. Which one am I going to focus on? So if I'm a goalkeeper, as an example, well, I might not focus on that one. I might focus on this one because there's about to be a shot up there. I've got time to respond to that. So there is different concepts, right? And there's different considerations for that. But fundamentally, what I often find is the biggest challenge for coaches is them just wanting to play the game the way that they want to play it. But sometimes the way that you want to play the game doesn't necessarily align to the game's principles, which is, again, fundamentally, I'm trying to score and you're trying to stop me. Or you're trying to score and I'm trying to stop you. It's directional, right? Like you said. Yeah. And if we don't respect that, we're not teaching them the game. We're teaching them something else.
Yeah, but also when you say, for now, last time I was visiting a coach educator, that's also my role, to ride along the country and visiting some coach educators. And that's quite interesting because I also learn every time I see a coach educator at his job. So, but there was a participant who was playing 5-6 against 5, and the central defender, there was a line and he didn't cross that line. So the coach educator asked to that coach, why not? Yeah, because he needs to stay there behind the line. Okay, but on Saturday, what do you want? Yeah, if we lose the ball, I want to play very compact.
Compact.
Okay, yeah. But when your last central defender is over here, but your striker is 60 meters ahead, how does that combine? Yeah, but I'm playing in zones. Okay, right. Yeah. All that kinds of stuff, you're playing like 5 times, you need to play five passes to each other, then you can score, or all those kind of rules. No, it's quite, and that's quite, you see that firstly at starting coaches, yeah, and you can touch one touch. Okay, quite interesting, because when my central defender is receiving the ball from my goalkeeper, but the striker is standing 40 meters away. By one touch, then he should dribble because then the striker is coming yes. towards him, and then he can play the ball to the other.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But when I touch the ball one time, it goes faster. Not always. Depends on the moment.
That's the key thing. You know, I often say to coach, if you're going to introduce something to the session, don't worry about the process they follow. Set the outcome. Set the objective.
Yeah.
Because if you set the objective, they'll come up with a way to do it, and you know. I use the example, like, you know, if you're Pep Guardiola as an example, you've spent £50 million on Erling Haaland, or however much they've spent on him. If he scores 50 goals this season, are you happy? I'm happy. Okay. And I say, okay, well, 2 days later, the season's finished. And then the analyst comes and tells you, Mark, did you know Erling scored 50 goals with his right kneecap? Are you still happy?
So happy.
So it's not about how they do it. They found a way to do it. Let them do it their way. Now, if they're finding troubles with that, then obviously you have to go in and support that and coach it. But actually,
yeah,
it's an opportunity for you to potentially learn another way of doing it. Right? But I think, and going back to my previous question, I think sometimes now, I think this is the struggle with, at least my observation is the struggle for a lot of coaches, is that if we think about coach education, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, and it has changed a lot, but back then, this is what I say, is that there was the benefits of back then was that we had clear instruction. This is how it's going to be. This is what it looks like. So you had a good reference point, that reference point you spoke about. Now, I think coaches have got more ideas that they're allowed to express themselves with, but they don't have a reference point to challenge those ideas.
Yeah, but I think that's quite important what you say, because they have experience. But is that also knowledge?
Yeah.
And I think when I don't reflect on my own handling or my, and also people around me who giving me feedback, then it will be possible from experience to go to knowledge. And mostly all the young coaches, they have experience. They don't have a lot of knowledge. And why not? Because they are not reflecting on their coaching, or they're giving their training session, or coaching a game, or managing their staff. No, this is how I do it, and that's it. No, you need someone besides you who is asking you questions. Why are you doing this? And what was the result of your actions by doing that. Mm. What was the result? It was not good. Okay, why was it not good? Okay, what could have you done differently? Mm. And then that's quite important when you have people. You need to surround you with people who are going to ask you a lot of questions so you could become a better football coach.
It's interesting because one of the things I often think about is how do we get coaches to become more reflective? How do we get them to be more intentional? It's a shame because anyone listening to this right now is probably going to think about being a better coach. So often the people that engage in stuff like this are people that are already on the right track, if that makes sense. It's the people that aren't listening to this that are probably going to be the ones that, that really need the help, right? So whenever I engage with a coach, I ask them questions like, you know, when was the last time you delivered a good session? And I'll say, yeah, last week. Okay, brilliant. My favorite question for them now is, can you prove it? Can you prove that it was a good session? And they'll start saying, yeah, I can prove it. Okay, how do you prove it? Oh, the players really enjoyed it. Okay, interesting. Is that your opinion or is that what they told you?
Yeah.
And do you trust your players enough to tell you the truth? Because this is an important thing. And I see often sometimes, especially with coaches, when they ask questions to the players, I've started challenging coaches now. I say, who's that question for? Is it for you or is it for them? Because if it's for you, then it's probably about affirmation that you're doing something right or that they're learning something.
Okay.
If it's for them, that means you're going to be searching for information rather than looking for answers, if that makes sense.
But I think that's the key question. And I give you an example because I work with Joshua Sirkzee at ADO Den Haag. Mm. And that age quite a good player. So I always have been in contact with him, and he went to Bayern Munich. And I saw the first training, the opening season, the first time he was at the first team. And it was quite an interesting training. It was about 8 against 8 with two net neutral players and a lot of small goals. But I was watching it on my laptop. So quite interesting. And I was thinking, okay, what could be the purpose of the training? Is it in transition form or building up or whatever? So I did it a week later with my own team, first team. It was a complete mess, that training, complete. And my players, coach, what is this? This is not you. Normally you're very structured and with two goals and attacking and defending. And then I had a conversation with Joshua. And he, okay, what was the purpose of the training? So he told me about it. And then I did it a week later. And it was a quite completely different training session with the right purpose, the right goals. So, and that's what I see right now at the moment. Yeah, they see a lot of training on YouTube. And then I'm coaching under 13 and we're going to play, talk about an inverted wing back. And we're going to make a box with the right winger. When they're under 13, just let them play normal football. You know, when we have the ball, we make it big. And we don't have the ball, we make the pitch very small. And when you start with that, and then you can make small steps. And that's what triggers me the most. When you have the characteristics of the game, and by simplifying the game, but also all the elements of the game within it, and it's quite unpredictable. Football is also an unpredictable sport, because the ball is free, it goes everywhere. So if you can develop a training session with the elements, it's quite challenging enough. Mm. For the players.
Mm. And you mentioned earlier about this concept of position, movement, direction, speed. Position, moment, sorry. Would you mind just elaborating on that a little bit? Just so that coaches can understand what you mean when you're talking about those four concepts.
Yeah, I think football does exist from communication, decision-making, and executing that decision. And when you're going to make that decision, you've got the what and the how of football, and then you've got a position, moment, direction, and speed. And let's say, for example, I want to make advantage of the space behind the last line of the opponent. So when I, for example, the goalie's playing the ball to my right wing, right central defender, and he's dribbling in. And when he is dribbling, it could be the moment of my striker to come into the ball. And when the moment when he's coming into the ball, that's the moment when my number 10 is going to make a run behind the last line. And when all those actions are really executed very well, so my number 4 is dribbling, number 9 is coming into the ball, number 10 is making the run, that's the moment of 4 playing the ball behind the last line when there is a lot of space. When there's no space, you need to make another decision. So based on team intentions, the players are going to make individual attentions. So for example, and that's quite interesting because let's say we take Virgil van Dijk as an example. And tonight they're going to play against Malta, and I think they will have a lot of space behind the last line. So they need to come with other solutions to create chances. So but for example, there will be a lot of space behind the last line. So Virgil has the ball, Memphis, let's say for example, is coming into the ball, and let's say Gakpo is making the run. And then Virgil's gonna execute and he's gonna pass the ball. But maybe the ball's too hard and it goes out. And it happens for 2 or 3 times. And then we also say, oh, what a bad player. It isn't his day. But maybe he communicates very well. He made the right decision based on the team intentions. But the execution, and that's the only thing we see, is not good. When you combine all those things, position, moment, direction, and speed, and if all those elements are at the right time, at the right moment, in the right direction, at the right speed, you're going to increase the chance of creating a chance of scoring a goal or preventing a goal.
So it's interesting because I often say for coaches, you know, there's always something you can intervene in. Doesn't have to be a full stop. It doesn't have to be an individual. It can be whatever it needs to be. But there's always going to be something. It's always either going to be a tactical thing or a technical thing. And the tactical thing is, coming back to what you're saying, is the first question for coaches to ask, do you disagree with the decision? Because the decision might be right, but the execution might have been poor. So therefore, you're not addressing tactical, you're addressing technical.
Yes.
Do you agree with the execution? Because actually, the decision might have been wrong, but there was a great technique around it. Okay, brilliant. Now we coach the tactical. Or linked to what you're saying, and as I'm thinking about what you're saying, it reminds me of like the analogy that I use. I often ask players on the pitch, ask yourself, where's my green light? Where's my green light? So I try and use the analogy of traffic lights. Now, we can cross the road when the light's not green, but now we have a risk of being in danger.
Yes.
Now, even if we cross the road when it's green, we can still potentially be in danger, but that's probably the safest time to make that decision. Now, I'm not sure what it's like in the Netherlands, but over here, some traffic lights, they don't have a timer. Some of them have a timer.
Same here in the Netherlands.
Now, I say, well, the ones where you've got more time, there'll be a timer. The ones where you've got no time, there probably won't be. So you have to cross the road quick. But constantly, you have to ask yourself, where's the traffic light and when is my green light appearing? Because if you are my centre back, as an example, and I'm the right winger, and if you're not looking towards me, then it's probably not a green light.
No.
So I have to wait now. I have to pay attention to that positioning aspect and like the finer details within that to recognise, okay, Mark's gone from looking to the left to now looking to the right. As Mark starts to go here, there's amber, now it's green.
Yes.
Right? And it amazes me sometimes when coaches are like, oh my gosh, there's so much information here. But the game is that detailed. The game is that detailed. There's a reason why when artwork is put together and is valued at a high price, it's because it's so detailed and the perception you have of it, right? And if one thing changes in that moment, then the artwork doesn't look the same anymore, right?
That's correct.
And, you know, if I come along and decide, actually, no, Mark's going to look this way and not this way. Well, actually, now Mark's done this, I can't do this. So it's about constantly reflecting and constantly being self-aware to say, right, well, what's next? What's next? What's next? What's the possibilities based on what's happening there and what's happening there? And I find it fascinating that I feel like that part was something that, not that we were taught, but we were encouraged to look for when I was coming through as a coach. And I feel like that's something now that coaches can't even comprehend. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
No, because they are not thinking at that level. They, I think when I became a coach educator, I also became a better football coach.
Yes, yes, 100%.
And 2 weeks ago, we had the applications for the next round of coach educators for starting next season. And we have all kinds of people because we have people with UEFA Pro license or UEFA A or UEFA B. At least you need to have UEFA B. But then I was sitting with a man, and he said, "Yeah, because it's quite interesting that course." He said, "Okay, I can only tell you one thing. When I became a coach educator, I also became a better football coach. Why? Because you're gonna reflect and evaluate everything you do."
Hmm.
And I think that's where most coaches, starting coaches, not the Arne Slots or the Pep Guardiolas or the Jurgen Klopp, but starting coaches, where they can win a lot from themselves, because how to reflect and evaluate on giving a coaching game or giving a training session. And what I see during courses, where we also do match analysis, and they see quite a lot. And they need to see quite a lot from less. And then you're going into the details, why is something working or why is something not working. But they can tell you anything they see within the bigger space.
Within the eyes, yeah.
Yeah, but not on the detailed line.
Yes. It's a real challenge sometimes, because I agree with you. I think, you know, since I started becoming a coach, you know, since I've started doing coach development, I definitely feel like I've developed as a coach. Because what I find, and maybe something similar for yourself, is a lot of the coaches that I'm working with, they've got great ideas. They just don't know how to connect the dots yet.
Yes.
So it allows me to just keep my thinking going, which I think is brilliant. And then it's just, sometimes it's not even giving them any knowledge. Sometimes it's just like, you, going back to what we said earlier, it's just asking them a question just to make sure, have you considered this? Have you considered that? Or, you know, what else might we need to think about? And, you know, I think that's, you know, it is coaching in its pure sense. I'm coaching the coach, right, to think more deeply about what they're doing and become more intentional about what they're doing. But again, you know, I often struggle with this, and it's, how do we get coaches to become more reflective? Because for a lot of them, they'll spend hours and hours, maybe not even that, on planning the session. But they won't spend anywhere near as much time reflecting.
No.
Because I actually think there's more power in the reflection than the plan.
First, you're gonna create a training session. You're going to give the training session, and then you need to reflect on the training session, because what was my goal for the training session? Okay, did we receive it? Yes. Okay. Why and how did we receive it? We didn't receive the goal. Okay. Why didn't we receive that goal? Okay. What happened? Who was responsible? Did I create the football learning situation? And that's quite difficult, because they are so busy with themselves. Some of them cannot oversee the result of the training session, because we have three questions in analysis: is the game being played, is the game being learned, and is the game being played, being learned, and how's the intensity of the game? And if you ask those three questions at the end of a training session, okay, did they learn? Okay, did they play football? How was the intensity? Okay. And if you can say yes to all of them, okay, perfect. And if you can say one or two times yes, okay, why not for the other one? And then you're going to need to reflect. And that's also in our courses, eh? Because when they create a training session, they need to make it and they put it in our electronic learning system.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, platform. And then we're going to give feedback, but they also need to reflect on their own training session. And then you can see which coach is quite good in reflecting and which coach needs to make steps within reflecting on his own, giving a training session or coaching a game.
You can fall into a rabbit hole, right? Because for me, if I'm the type of person, is that I'll reflect on my session, but then I'll reflect on how I've reflected. And then I'll reflect on how I've reflected about how I've reflected.
Yeah.
So it never ends, right?
I think the first question you can ask for your players, okay, what did you find of this training session? Okay, and where you have a good relationship with your team, they're gonna ask, they're gonna answer you quite honest. Yeah, we didn't like it, or yes, we did learn it. It was fun.
Yeah,
that's the first step you can take. Come reflect when the session is finished. Come together. Okay, what did we do today? What was our goal? Did we receive it? Why did we receive it, or why didn't we receive it?
Do you know what's really interesting? It just took me back to a moment. I think it was around about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, around the time I was doing my A license, and I wanted to. Most of my experience at that time was predominantly working with 14s to kind of 19s, and I wanted to, do my own kind of research, if you like, and trying to find out, is there some things which are just constant across the board for players, and what gets the best out of them in terms of the type of session that we design. And I ended up coming up with these three key principles, and it was challenge, competition, and intensity. Right? Challenge, competition, intensity. Now, challenge because, they're human beings. They wanted to be engaged by the challenge. If it's too challenging, it's going to switch off. If it's too easy, they're going to switch off. So it needs to be appropriately challenged. Competition, because with the competition was linked to transition. They needed to be transition because they needed to be consequence. So if I do something that, the thing that players I've identified switches them off the most is if they know they can't do anything with it when they get it.
Yeah.
So they have to have the constant transition. So it was that challenge, transitioning / competition. And then the final thing was the intensity. If it's done at a slow pace, they're going to switch off. If I'm getting them to work at a higher intensity, now it leads to the concept of, right, can you find your flow? Can you find your flow? So it's not always 100%, but it's not always it's not always 10%.
Oh.
Can you respond to what the game is asking you to do in that moment? Now, because I was heavily focused on working with 14s to 19s at the time, I thought, okay, this just works for these guys. But then it comes back to your question. What did you find? What did you find around, how did you find the training session? And what I found is that actually that question wasn't helpful for me. The question that helped me the most was, what did you like about the session? Right? What did you like about the session? And then, in their own ways, they would then eventually lead me back to these three terms. The competition, the transition,
the challenge.
Do you understand? So then, okay, so then I thought, okay, cool. So it's not about the training session that we're doing. It's about the way this session is making you feel. Okay, so as an example, then I started questioning, okay, so when, one of the biggest things that we see from a lot of coaches when they say, what do your players do at the start of the session? Well, they pick up a ball and they start shooting. Yeah, but is it as simple as that? Is it because they like shooting, or is it because they like the feeling they get from shooting? And
shooting.
Okay, so now my challenge is how do I create that feeling in every session, but without having to rely on there being a shot, if that makes sense. And then I got thrown into another environment where I was working with like 4 to 6, 4 to 8 year olds, and I just thought to myself, let me just see if this stuff works. And it did. They needed challenge. They wanted competition. They needed transition to make sure that competition level and that challenge level stayed high. But it was intense as a result of all those things anyway.
Yeah.
And then it kind of every... So what I ended up finding over the years from that point onwards is I don't need to come up with different sessions. So now I maybe at most maybe have 7 or 8 different kind of templates that I use. I might just change the size, change the space, make it longer, make it wider, make it narrow, whatever I need to do with it based on the number of players I've got. But then it's interesting. It goes back to your earlier point about I'm using those templates to create football learning situations.
That's all about.
That's it. And you know, the simplicity of that is very simple. Like, is this something that happens in the game in this way?
So there should be always be a transfer between the game and your training session and back again to the game. So you've got your game, training session, game, and that's a transfer you always make.
100%. And again, it's the important part of it. And I'd love to share this with you at a later point to get your thoughts. I've started developing this framework around a 360 degree approach to training sessions. So you're looking at it through different lenses, not just what does the session look like for you, or what does the vision of the moment look like for you, but actually what does it look like from the person involved in the moment, which we can talk about at a later point. But you know, there's been a lot of stuff shared in this conversation so far, and I really appreciate your time and your effort in doing so, but I'm conscious of time. So my question to you is this: is there anything that you think, as a result of this conversation, that's been discussed in this conversation, that you really think coaches should really think deeper about?
I think they should think deeper about creating a football learning situation and make the transfer from your game towards the training, and then simplify that training session, because when you play 11 against 11, it's not going to happen quite often. But when you play 6 against 5, hey, your players are more often in that situation, so they can learn longer, they can learn more, and they can make better choices. So making decisions. And that's quite important. And first of all, simplifying the game, but simplifying with the key players. So when you want to put pressure with your strikers on the last line, you don't need to do that on your own half. You know? So you create that situation with those key players in that situation. And then, you should make the transfer. Okay, it didn't happen in the game. Why didn't it happen? We're going to create the session. Okay, next Saturday we play a match again. Hey, now it's going to happen. Why is it going to happen? What did we do well? And then reflect with your players on your own training session, but also your coaching during the game, because are you telling them, or are you going to ask them questions? And I think when you ask people questions, they're going to learn more than I'm always saying to my son, clean up the dishwasher, or you're going to cook tonight. No, you want to cook tonight? Yeah, what are we going to make? Yeah, I want to make vegetables with potatoes and meat. Hey, perfect. Go ahead, my friend. Let me surprise me. So, and when you do that, the result will be much bigger.
Yeah, 100%. The impact is what it's all about. And I think if you, through asking those questions, we're almost empowering them to take that impact, you know, to take that opportunity to have an impact. Mark, it's been fascinating. Some really, really, really interesting points that you've made.
Quite interesting, this conversation.
100%. I just want to say a massive thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll definitely be staying in touch. And if there's any other opportunities to connect, I think we definitely should do that.
We will. No problem. Next season of next year and 25, then we'll come to the Netherlands with because we were invited by the FA for 5 days. And it was quite impressive to see how they educate coach educators and how do we coach educators. But also the because like we were it's in George Park, the facilities, and we know the English FA, they have a little bit of more money than the Dutch FA, but when you see how you're going to develop coaches, developing training courses, that's also quite important. I think our roads will cross again, 100%. And maybe you can come to the Netherlands and I will show you around in Zeist.
Awesome, amazing. I can't wait for that. Definitely going to take you up on that opportunity.
No problem.
Again, Mark, I really appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.